Welcome to Speaking in Maine on Maine Public Radio. I'm Jonathan Woodward. Speaking in Maine brings you public policy lectures, debates, and panel discussions from across Maine. Today, we take you to Portland for a celebration held by the Maine Conservation Alliance called Evening for the Environment in celebration of the gift of the North Woods National Monument. The keynote speaker for the evening is Interior Secretary Sally Jewell. This program can be heard on our website, mpbn.net, where Speaking in Maine is available for streaming and as a podcast. Leading the remarks is Executive Director of the Maine Conservation Alliance, Maureen Druin.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Evening for the Environment. My name is Maureen Druin, and I am Executive Director of Maine Conservation Alliance, an amazing job where I get to work with all of you for a clean and healthy environment. And I don't know about you, but I am ready for a good party. Because we all work really hard to tackle climate change and protect Maine's air, land, and water. And at least once a year, we should take a moment to celebrate our successes. This year, Maine people achieved a tremendous victory with the establishment of the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. It's also the centennial of Acadia National Park and the National Park Service. And actually, my 8-year-old daughter, when she knew I was coming tonight, wanted me to have her special centennial edition Junior Ranger badge for tonight, which she earned this summer at Acadia. I am delighted to welcome our distinguished guest and keynote speaker, Interior Secretary Sally Jewell. Thank you. Thank you so much for traveling to Maine to be with us today. Now, I heard that Secretary Jewell was visiting Rachel Carson National Wildlife Refuge earlier today. Rachel Carson, who said, "Those who contemplate the beauty of the earth find reserves of strength that will endure as long as life lasts." Rachel Carson, who believed in the conservation of our natural areas and also advocacy, so that we always have places to contemplate the beauty of the earth, but also the laws and policies to protect them. Rachel Carson, a marine biologist and writer who showed incredible courage, blazing a path forward for women scientists, and stood up to the powerful forces who tried to silence her. As heirs to Rachel Carson's vision, I hope we all find reserves of strength and the courage to continue protecting the woods and waters and wildlife of this beautiful state. But for tonight, let's celebrate Acadia, Katahdin Woods and Waters, and the National Park System, which provide a lasting legacy for generations to come. I'd like to welcome Brigitte Kingsbury to the stage, who will make a presentation on behalf of the Board of Directors of the Maine Conservation Alliance. Brigitte?
Thank you, Maureen. On behalf of the Board of Directors of Maine Conservation Alliance, I would welcome you all to the Evening for the Environment. We cannot hold a celebration of the National Park Service without recognizing Acadia National Park, our jewel on Maine's coast. I am delighted to introduce David McDonald, President and CEO of Friends of Acadia. Friends of Acadia is an ally not only in the work of conservation, but also in its ongoing effort to reduce air pollution and combat climate change. Thank you, David, for coming here from your beloved Acadia National Park.
Thank you, Brigitte. Well, your words are right on in terms of how I wanted to start my remarks. My association with this event over the years has been because of my wife, Caroline Pryor, longtime board member here at the Maine Conservation Voters and Maine Conservation Alliance. Tonight, my connection to the event is the other love of my life, Acadia National Park. And it can be hard to pry me off the rock up there and bring me down to the big city, but it is really an honor to be here alongside Maine Conservation Alliance and sharing the stage with the Secretary, with John Lund, Lucas, all the other folks who have made 2016 a really, really historic year. Many of you know 2016 is also the centennial of the founding of Acadia National Park, which shares many parallels with the new monument up north. And July 8th, 1916 was the day that President Woodrow Wilson accepted the deeds creating Acadia National Park and beginning this amazing 100-year journey that we've all been on. I've been one of the few who is lucky enough to spend most of my life up on Mount Desert. I grew up there as a kid, and After living down here in Southern Maine for a couple years, I realized something was missing from my life, so I got back up there in a hurry, and now work for Friends of Acadia, the organization that Brigitte mentioned. We've been around about 30 years, and we're founded, actually one of our founders is here tonight, Lois Winter. You're in the room somewhere, please. Thank you for your work, Lois. And Friends of Acadia was founded on a really simple premise that residents, you know, deserved more avenues to give back to this place that they love so much. So we were all volunteer for a number of years. We've grown by leaps and bounds. Now I'm lucky enough to head up a staff of 12. We've got over 5,000 members, and the love for Acadia and the desire to give back to this place are just endless, and we're fortunate to be in the position to channel and receive and pass a lot of that through to the park. I'm sorry my colleagues from the park are not here. We could not protect Acadia without the amazing work of the National Park Service staff and the rangers and the interpretive folks and the staff there do this job day in and day out, and they do an amazing job. Acadia, as many of you know, experienced record visitation this year, and the year's not over yet. The place was really buzzing today when we left. We will likely see over 3 million visitors this year at Acadia. And that's a great situation. It's a great problem to have, but today, actually, the Park Service released some of their early options and alternatives for how to better manage that visitation. The park is undergoing a transportation plan, and today is the day they released some concepts of how we can handle this kind of growing visitation at the park. So I encourage any and all of you to be involved in this process. Again, the work of protecting our national parks is not over with a stroke of a pen or the passing of the deed, and that's why the work of Friends of Acadia and the involvement of all of you in our parks is really, really essential. 2016 brought our work to new heights. A birthday ending with two zeros is a great excuse to reach out to people and get folks involved. When the planning for the centennial at Acadia began, we had this dream that we might recruit 100 local businesses and schools and nonprofits to be Acadia Centennial Partners. Today, I'm really proud to tell you we have 459 Acadia Centennial Partners from throughout the community. And these are families, they're businesses, they're churches, they're nonprofits, they're schools, and they have done everything to honor their park in a thousand different ways. And it's just been incredibly inspiring. It's been very decentralized. It was not organized by the Park Service. It wasn't organized by Friends of Acadia. This was a community upwelling of support for the park. So if anything, you know, my message to the new monument and the folks just getting started is that community involvement is what will carry you through 100 years from now. And how cool is it that in 2116, we're going to celebrate 100 years of the new monument, 200 years of Acadia, 200 years of the Park Service. I won't be around, but I know that the love for these places will carry the parks through the second century. And again, it's just a real honor to be here tonight. Thank you, Maureen, and your staff for the amazing work. And I really look forward to the rest of the program. So thanks so much. It's now my pleasure to ask Adam Lee to come up to the stage. Adam, of course, is the chairman of Lee Auto Malls and also chairman of the planning committee for tonight's event and a fierce advocate for Maine's land, water, and environment. Thank you, Adam.
Good evening. My name's Adam Lee, and tonight I really do have the greatest job in the world. I get to thank everyone who was involved in making this national monument a reality. And like all of you, I can't believe that we're actually sitting here celebrating this. And like everyone here tonight, and I mean everyone, we've all worked so hard. Everybody has done something to help push this along, but tell me that there wasn't a point where every one of you thought this isn't going to happen. It's been a long haul. I remember meeting Roxanne for the first time around 5 or 6 years ago at a Maine Conservation Voters Luncheon. I was talking with her. I had not met her. I had certainly read plenty about her. The luncheon got over, and I went over and introduced myself. And I was speaking with her, and she was sort of telling me her vision, that in 2016 would be the 100th anniversary of the Park Service in Acadia, and she had some holdings within Acadia that she said she was going to donate back. And then as part of a big celebration, she'd donate this big piece of land to the east of Baxter and establish a national park. And there was a lot in the press. It was a really horrible environment, really negative. And I found myself staring at her while she was speaking. And this is all true, I couldn't really focus on what she was saying because I was so stunned by how optimistic she seemed. And I was really just looking at her, and then I suddenly realized that she had stopped speaking and she was looking at me waiting for a response. And I was sort of caught short, and I usually say what's on my mind, and I just sort of leaned forward and said, "I hope you have a backup plan." And she chuckled. She was very good. She chuckled and said, "Well, we're just going to keep plugging away." And I thought, wow, okay. Well, they did plug away, and so did everyone in this room. There are not a lot of people who have the financial wherewithal to do what you have done. And those that do are often busy building yachts, buying jets, living in the south of France, which really doesn't sound so bad. You are a self-made woman, and you did what few people in the world managed to do. You started with nothing, had a good idea, worked your butt off, and you made a fortune. You then spent your time and money buying land to leave to the people of Maine, the United States, and the entire world. And you didn't give up. And I don't think there are many people in the world who would have stuck with this project, especially in the face of what I would call just the unbelievable negativity around it. The atmosphere in Maine towards the park, and you personally, was terrible. I found it astounding and embarrassing that people were not only looking a gift horse in the mouth, but they were mean and nasty about it. And it was embarrassing. But you stuck with it. And you did one more thing that's really hard to do, but was wise. And frankly, I feel was the key to our sitting here tonight celebrating Katahdin Woods and Waters. You turned the project over to your son, Lucas St. Clair. And he was absolutely... he was the right man for the job. When you ask Lucas what he spent all of his time doing, he'll tell you, driving back and forth to Millinocket, drinking endless cups of coffee, and listening. Doing a lot of listening. Now, I know Lucas fairly well, and I'm guessing there had to be a few bottles of beer mixed in with those endless cups of coffee. Lucas took over at a crucial time. He got group after group on board. In his own charming way, he got people who thought this was a terrible idea to agree it was actually a good idea. Through the years, I've spoken to at least a dozen people who were opposed to the park and who remain opposed, but said, "Lucas is a good guy. I don't agree with him, but he's all right." And in Maine, "he's all right" is pretty high praise. More importantly, he did something else that's so hard to do. He did not give up. I'm a third-generation car salesman. I know about perseverance. Lucas, you are the embodiment of perseverance. And I'm thinking this whole park thing's over. Maybe you want to sell cars or come see me after. On behalf of the Maine Conservation Alliance and everyone in Maine and beyond, I want to present you with a sample of Maine's newest brew, Perseverance Ale. Right here. It's brewed especially for you, complete with your picture on the label. Please stand up and help me welcome and thank Lucas St. Clair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Adam. That was a wonderful introduction. Well, this is a very special evening. It's a real pleasure to be able to stand in front of you all, such an amazing group of conservationists and environmentalists. And tonight I have the honor of presenting the Harrison R. Richardson Environmental Leadership Award. This award was established in 2009 to honor the memory of Harry Richardson, who served in the Maine House and the Maine Senate in the 60s and 70s and was a chief architect of Maine's strongest laws to protect our air, land, and water. He stood up for Maine's environment under enormous political pressure and mastered the art of building bipartisan support for environmental measures. The recipient of the award this year is the Katahdin Area Chamber of Commerce. And this is a group of visionary leaders that I am proud to know very, very well. I met them almost 4 years ago on a winter day about 10 miles outside of Millinocket. They were holding their annual board meeting, and I had been invited there to present the park proposal. And I stayed after my presentation for almost an hour answering questions, very, very thoughtful ones. And as the meeting wrapped, I asked if they would endorse the project. If they said yes, they would be the first organization to make the endorsement. They polled their members, and less than a month later, Gail Fanjoy, the board chair, she called me. She told me that the board had decided to not only endorse the park, but also to write a letter of support to Maine's congressional delegation. From that moment on, the chamber and its members have proven to be a unifying force in the region. While a vocal minority attempted to drive a wedge between neighbors, organizations, and even families, the chamber brought people together around a visionary idea for improving their community. Even when the local town council pulled their funding, the chamber stayed focused on the future and making the Katahdin region a better place. Chamber members worked tirelessly. They sat with members of Congress in Washington, D.C. and in the region. They wrote letters, they attended press conferences, they testified in front of the state legislature and made their position clear in front of over 1,200 people at a public meeting in Orono last spring. On August 24th, the chamber's hard work paid off when President Barack Obama created the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. It is my honor to present the Harrison R. Richardson Award for Environmental Leadership to the Katahdin Area Chamber of Commerce, and here to accept the award is Gail Fanjoy.
Thank you. Thank you, and good evening. It is my great honor to accept this award from the Maine Conservation Alliance on behalf of the Katahdin Area Chamber of Commerce. Quite frankly, I was a little taken aback when Lucas called to tell me about the award. After all, the chamber's mission is not one of conservation, but one that seeks to develop and promote business and commerce. Nevertheless, here we are in a beautiful marriage, connecting conservation goals and economic opportunity in a way that only the Katahdin Woods and Waters could provide. We can't thank enough Lucas, Roxanne, Hannah, not just for your unprecedented gift, but for leading sometimes a ragtag caravan of supporters to a successful conclusion. True to its promise, and despite the gauntlet of anti-park signs monument visitors must drive through, it is true. If you build it, they will come. And you know what? They even wander into nearby communities. They dine, they sleep, they spend money. For over 100 years, the Katahdin region's economy was fueled by cutting down trees and making paper. Carving communities and industry out of the great North Woods frontier. Can you imagine the thought and daring that took in the late 1800s, early 1900s? Today, I believe we are standing on the edge of a new frontier, a new economic and environmentally conscious frontier that will also take thought and daring. But this time, we will leave the trees standing, the air and water pure, the landscape unscarred, the night sky dark, and we will prosper. We will prosper once again. Thank you.
So as you can see, we had a pretty incredible spokesperson for, we're very fortunate. Thank you for sharing, Gail, that was great. So I have the incredible opportunity to do something I never thought I'd be doing, and that's introducing the Secretary of Interior in my home state of Maine. I've been told that the Secretary does not like to be introduced with the reading of her resume, While that resume is very impressive, I will follow her wishes and encourage you all to look it up. It's very impressive. I first met Sally in her hometown of Seattle in 2010. At that time, she was the CEO of REI, and she was on the board of the National Park Conservation Association. And we met at an NPCA holiday party. The first thing she said to me was, "Oh, I love the lip balm that your mom makes." And then said, "Boy, your mom really has her hands full in northern Maine right now, doesn't she?" And it was in the heat of the debate in 2010, and she was right. Neither of us could have imagined the roles that we would end up playing 6 years later to free my mom's hands up in northern Maine. Sally became the Secretary of Interior on April 12, 2013. Since then, she has overseen the creation of several new national monuments, created huge swaths of protected ocean in both the Atlantic and the Pacific, and introduced thousands of new users to America's public lands. She has been the right-hand woman of President Barack Obama as he solidified his administration's legacy of carrying out more conservation than any other president in American history. Sally has been instrumental in working to make visitation to our public lands more representative of our nation's population, encouraging a diverse cross-section of Americans to go out and find their park. In doing so, she helped create the Sewell Belmont House National Monument, which tells the story of women's suffrage in America, the Harriet Tubman National Historic Park, which allows visitors to learn about the Underground Railroad, and the Stonewall Inn National Historic Monument that tells the story of the LGBT uprising in Lower Manhattan and the relevance of that movement, which contributed to marriage equality being the law of the land in America. Throughout this, Sally has stayed true to what matters most in her life, the outdoors. Her staff asked me, "What would Sally do when she comes to Maine to celebrate Katahdin Woods and Waters?" And I said, "Well, if it's my preference, we would float down the east branch of the Penobscot in canoes and camp out at the confluence of the Wassatikok Stream." And relieved, they said, "Well, that's exactly what we should do. And just make sure we're able to meet a lot of people from the community." And that's exactly what we did. Sally's the real deal. She practices what she preaches. She has climbed Mount Vincent, the highest point in Antarctica, summited Mount Rainier multiple times, including as a teenager. And she is a dedicated sea kayaker, sailor, and hiker. Sally knows what it means to get a nature fix. Last August, after camping out overnight, Sally and I and some of my family decided to take a quick trip up the East Branch in a canoe before breakfast. And her security detail, a very strong-looking former New York City cop, told me that he would like to join us on the boat. And Sally looked at him and said, "Well, why?" And he said, "Well, what if you slip?" And she looked at him and said, "Well, what if you slip?" And he relented, which was amazing. And while I'm sure that he could do push-ups with our entire party on his back, he knew that Secretary Jewell knows how to take care of herself in the outdoors, and we are so fortunate that she also knows how to take care of the outdoors, and that she has found time in her amazingly busy schedule to join us here tonight. My friends, it is a great honor to introduce Secretary of Interior Sally Jewell.
It's going to be hard to live up to that. It's going to be hard to live up to all of the speakers here. What an incredible group of people you have assembled tonight. Thank you, Lucas, for those wonderful words, but more importantly, for the inspiration that you've given to all of us. More importantly, thanks to your mother for everything. I mean, Adam did such a nice job of laying out this incredible gift that Roxanne has given to the American people. Incredible. And of course, she didn't stop with 87,500 acres. She threw in $20 million to make sure that we could actually have a visitor center that you'd be as proud of as the woods and waters that it represents. And she said, "I will help get another $20 million. And so she just doesn't stop, not to mention a few nice gifts to Acadia here recently, including a campground that she just purchased. So She is an incredible resource. She deserves our love and support. So it's abundantly clear from tonight's program, and also as I learned when Lucas and I first talked about this in 2010, that it does take a village. It takes an incredible donor. It takes a willing recipient in the National Park Service, but it takes a very large and dedicated village, and that's what you all represent. Maine Conservation Alliance, clearly for many years, thank you, John, has been doing incredible work in making sure that this beautiful part of your upper right corner of the right coast, since I'm from the upper left corner of the left coast, is protected for generations to come, and that this organization has done. And the Natural Resources Council of Maine, and the National Parks Conservation Association, which I was associated with for some time, and Gail, the Gatun Area Chamber of Commerce, that really deeply understands, as I do, that there is no conflict between thriving businesses and a thriving conservation community. Indeed, one supports the other, and vice versa. Nice job. So there are many of you out there that have supported so many conservation actions in Maine, and I hope that you'll continue to do that for the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument as we get this fledgling organization up and going. So, you know, there are some tough times in this job, and Shelley Pingree will understand what those look like because, you know, she sits in some of those hearings that we have to endure, and it is part of democracy, and it is very important, but it's not always easy. But sometimes I'm reminded that I do have the best job in the world. And one of those times was when, as Lucas relayed, my office was the Maine North Woods, which was great. And Greg is my security detail over there. And so he'd be happy to have you crawl on his back while he does push-ups. And I'd be happy to watch. They do a fantastic job of keeping us safe in interesting circumstances. And we did see a giant bear together in Grand Teton. Lucas talked about that lovely paddle trip down the East Branch of the Penobscot River. And I thank the members of the media that chose to join us for that trip. And I thank Matt Polstein for providing the wonderful, it's not mine, I don't have it on, but it's for providing the equipment for us. The beautiful loop road that we drove, put in by EPI, Elliottsville Plantation Incorporated, Roxanne and Lucas's organization, that provides access to visitors. And we hiked from there to beautiful viewpoint. Is it Badger Mountain Summit? Barnard Mountain Summit. And what an incredible view as you look out at Mount Katahdin, yes, and as the beautiful lakes that are all that punctuate that incredible carpet of green in between. And we camped at Lunxus Camp, and Susan and Mark Adams, who work for EPI and do an incredible job with, small but mighty staff, not only welcomed us there with a wonderful dinner with community members, and it was a delight to meet members of the communities, but as I went to my personal gigantic tent, which I'm not used to. I'm used to sharing with like six people. And a cot, which I'm also not used to. And a sleeping bag on my pillow was lost on a mountain in Maine. With a little tag in the last chapter saying, read this, you will understand when you read it. Because of course, Don Fendler was found at Lunxus Camp. Just passed away on Monday. It shows that the outdoors is really good for your health, so I encourage you to get out there. But I read the book, which is nice. I haven't read very many books in this job, but there are very few books I get that I can read in an hour. But I wrote a note in it, and I gave it to my oldest grandson, who is now delighted to read it and inspired to get out there and use the hatchet and the knife that I've already given him. His parents aren't necessarily happy about. And the backpack. They're both pediatric critical care nurses, so. But I believe you should get hurt as a child in the woods every now and then. And of course, we took a wonderful ride up the river that Lucas referenced, but we took a ride up to the confluence with the Satakook River, and we talked about the Penobscot people and the Wabanaki and the, can't read my writing, Maliseet, is that right? And the incredible archaeology that is in that region and how important this area is to tribes and people that did take care of these lands since time immemorial. So it was an amazing few days, and it's very clear, though, that I'm just one of many, many people that has fallen in love with the Maine North Woods and the night skies and the hoot of the owl, which we heard that night. But there's a rich history of hunting and fishing, living off the land and engaging in these lands. Not only the native people since time immemorial, but of course, Henry David Thoreau. It's all mossy and moosey out here. And Teddy Roosevelt, who of course lost his hiking boot, probably crossing the Satakook River, and hiked the rest of the way up Mount Katahdin in moccasins, which has to hurt. The area also is, of course, one of the most pristine watersheds in the Northeast, with woods and waters that are home to a wide range of birds and wildlife, from, of course, the iconic moose. And I enjoyed all the moose gallery, the moose itself, and all the moose paraphernalia that helps define this area. No, I didn't see anything of the ruffed grouse, but I know it's out there too. But all told, having been to incredible public lands and waters around this great nation, there are a few places more deserving of the National Park Arrowhead than this spectacular corner of our nation. So I hope that you are all as proud of this new monument that will preserve the landscape and honor the history and the culture of the Maine North Woods for generations to come. So, I want to talk about how optimistic we are that this monument has a very, very bright future. David mentioned 3 million visitors likely at Acadia National Park. I've been there multiple times myself. I think I've probably hiked 40 or 50 miles of the trail. I know I've been up every single ladder, which is one of the coolest things about Acadia. I'm thinking, we allow this in the National Park Service? Okay, well, I'm gonna go up these before we take them out. But those three million people, I mean, some of them, of course, are from Maine or they've driven up from other parts of New England, but many of them, like me, come from a long way away. And when you come from a long way away, you actually want to make a vacation out of it. And this is going to drive visitation to Katahdin Woods and Waters and this beautiful region. So, Gail, hang on, because I think there's going to be a lot more business coming your way. So, over the years, of course, as we've heard, there have been countless conversations in town halls and in coffee counters and around kitchen tables. And as Lucas and Adam and Gail and others have said, not everyone was enthusiastic about this idea, as the people in this room are. But I will also say that's common in the history of our public lands designations. If you go back and you look at presidential proclamations of national monuments, going back to the first ones created, you will see strong community opposition just about everywhere, because as a people, we're comfortable with the familiar. And I use a phrase often that it's hard to let go of the from if you don't know what the to is. And what we have done, and Gail talked well about it, is paint a different picture of what to looks like for this region. And what's very, very encouraging is that people are signing up. So in the weeks after the designation, the National Park Service, of course, held community meetings. Any of you go to the community meetings? Up there, handful of you. Thank you very much. I would expect you to go, Gil. And probably to drive a few other people to go. So in Stacyville, which was the first meeting, it's a town of 302. There were 180 people at the meeting. That was the first meeting, and I'm sure people were curious, and they came in from a variety of different areas, but that's huge. And all told, the National Park Service heard from about 550 people over the course of 4 meetings. And I'd say what's most noteworthy about those meetings, besides the predictable interest, was what was missing, and that was any anger and any bitterness. So why is that? I think it says a lot about Maine and the people of Maine. Largely positive, but people were focused on the future. They're focused on being pragmatic. They were focused on contributing to productive discussions in what can be done now that the decision has been made. And that is really great for the first few weeks after a national monument. Second, EPI had the good sense to put a vehicle counter on the loop road back in May. And Tim Hudson, who is supervisor overseeing the park right now, which means he supervises Christina because it's just the two of them so far. But they had about 40 vehicles a week before the monument was designated. They're up to 120 vehicles a week right after the monument was designated. And Lucas tells me that over this last three-day weekend with Indigenous People Day, or Columbus Day, depending on what state you're in, I prefer the former, you saw 238 vehicles over the course of 3 days, which is pretty amazing. So yes, it's not yet 3 million people over the course of the year, but it supports what we're hearing anecdotally, and Gail gave us a little bit of a taste of that, because we're seeing more people, the businesses there are seeing different faces, they're seeing busier towns, and that's good news for the communities that have been hit hard by paper mill closings. And this is, I come from, again, the upper left corner of the left coast, but also timber country, and I know how painful that can be. So as we know, as we've seen with Acadia, the national parks do have the power to create jobs and to jumpstart local economies in a major way. And so, again, Gail, hang on. The last little vignette I want to give you about Katahdin is that we've set up two visitor contact stations. One that I visited was at the Patton Lumberman's Museum. And Rhonda Brophy, who oversees that facility, gave the Park Service a table to display the Arrowhead logo and maps of the park, which, given some of the opposition in the community, is a brave move on her part. She also gave us a tour of the camps that had been relocated there to interpret the history of and the equipment and the way of life of loggers, and it wasn't an easy way of life, that helped provide a real picture of Maine's rich timber culture. And I know, I'm confident, that far more people will see that museum and they will appreciate this heritage and this history that continues in Maine in the timber industry. So that's one. The second site, of course, is in Millinocket. And the new visitor contact station which I visited was, let's just say, musty. It had been vacant for about 3 years, but the rent was a really good price. But over several days, we had about 40 volunteers from the community that came together, and they pulled up the old carpet, and they ripped off the peeling wallpaper, and with the support of local businesses and EPI, they put on a fresh coat of paint, they installed new flooring, they updated the light fixtures. And one woman, when asked why she did it, said, "This is part of our community now, and we want to be friendly to our neighbors." So taken together, you should be very proud of the character of your fellow Mainers up there. They tell me these communities are resilient, they're hopeful, and they're willing to roll up their sleeves to get things done, and that's exactly what they've do and what they've done, and it makes me very, very optimistic about the future of Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. So huge congratulations to all of you for your monumental effort. So I do want to spend just a little bit of time, and I think this is probably the right audience to do it, to talk about what it means to celebrate the National Park Centennial. And yes, it is an opportunity to celebrate over 400 natural, historic, and cultural sites that make up the most incredible park system on Earth, and I've met with a number of different countries that are trying to replicate what we do. But it's also time to reflect on the next 100 years of conservation, and I know there's several young people that I met earlier that are in the audience, and we're going to be turning this over to you. And what's it going to look like, and what do we need to do? So there's three areas I want to talk particularly about where I think we can make a difference to ensure a bright future for our national parks and our public lands. So we have a big challenge that we share together, and that is climate change. It's fair to say the most pressing issue of our time. Yes. It's one where our public lands and waters can have a big impact. It does challenge us in existential ways. We've got longer, hotter fire seasons. We've got wacky weather like droughts in Maine, right? Record-breaking droughts, particularly in California. More frequent and severe superstorms. And just to bring it into the here and now, just reading a report this morning from the U.S. Geological Survey about how many high water marks being set right now in North Carolina as those floodwaters continue to rise from Hurricane Matthew. We had a study that we released last week in Shenandoah National Park that the USGS, National Park Service, and several universities did that said spring is coming earlier to national parks across the country, where in some cases we have 100 years of data. So what does that mean? Well, in Acadia, for example, birds are migrating earlier. The hawk is coming at a different time than it was before. Invasive species and managing invasive species are for a longer season, now extending into the school year, which means that the park has to pay a longer period of time for field crews to deal with those invasive species to the extent that we can. The timing of pollinators is out of whack with the flowers. And I talked to one farmer, actually from New England, who said, no apples, no peaches this year. And the explanation from that, lots of flowers on the tree, is no pollinators at the right time. And fall colors are impacted as well. I know down south, I was in Shenandoah National Park at 3,000 feet on Saturday, and the trees were green as can be. Very, very unusual. But it's because it's been so warm, the warmest summer on record. So science is also helping us understand the role that healthy, intact ecosystems play in combating climate change. Cleaning our air and water, and we do from Shenandoah National Park, where I was, have cleaner air than we've had in many years, thanks to the Clean Air Act and thoughtful legislation put in place in the 1970s. I was there with Gina McCarthy from the EPA. Forests, wetlands are also incredible places for storing carbon, and we're putting a lot of that out there, so we need to store a lot. So Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, along with neighboring Baxter State Park, and what a conservation legacy that was for Governor Baxter to set that land aside and to keep it as really wildland, together will bolster the ability of Maine to respond and react to climate change. So this new monument is a shining example of not only how to protect large areas, but also a thoughtful way that we can manage those areas to preserve their integrity and to be part of the solution in this challenge that we face with climate change. This monument also respects traditional uses, and I want to give a shout out to Lucas and to Roxanne and to the other people that were involved in really making sure that people that did love to snow machine through part of the area were able to do that, that were allowed to hunt could do that, but so those ecosystems, for the most part, could stay completely intact. So whether it's the North Woods of Maine, the Florida Everglades, or the vast sagebrush sea across the west, landscape-level planning, looking at this holistically, working with private landowners and public landowners is how we combat climate change while working, of course, to reduce the amount that we put in the atmosphere to begin with. So the second thing I want to talk about the next 100 years of conservation, has to do with investing in the future. We have got to make serious investments in our lands and waters to make sure that they're prepared for the next 100 years. So just to give you a few numbers, David talked about the visitation to Acadia. Last year, we saw record visitation of the National Park Service broadly, 307 million visitors. We have seen dramatic increases this year, but the numbers aren't yet in. The year's not yet over, but even if you look at the fiscal year, we don't have the numbers yet. But I know I was in Glacier in September, that month saw a 33% increase in visitation, which is great, right? I mean, it's a little crowded, but you know, people don't mind waiting a while when they've got incredible vistas around them. But the maintenance backlog in our national park system is $12 billion, and that's also at record levels. We do get criticized when we add units, saying, how can you add when you can't manage what you have? But they would have said that every time we added a national monument. And you have to move when you have the opportunity to move. So budget crunches have left our parks understaffed and struggling to keep up. And yet, in 2015, the national parks generated $32 billion in economic activity for the nation. It's a 10-to-1 return on the taxpayer dollar invested in the parks. So we need to make that case. We really do. And I also will say that philanthropists have stepped forward. Philanthropists, yes, like Roxanne, philanthropists like many of you in the room. We have more volunteers than we've ever had before in the National Park Service. 10 volunteers to every employee, 250,000 of them across the country. But, you know, private support and volunteerism should be the margin of excellence, not the margin of survival. So, Congress has a role to play here. And I didn't understand how valuable my visits were to elected officials when I was in the private sector, even though I did them. I thought, is this really making a difference? And the short answer is, it really does make a difference. Funding public land management agencies and the critical infrastructure projects are sound investments, and we need to make that case. Encouraging private philanthropy through a matching gift program is something that one of my predecessors, Dirk Kempthorne, under George W. Bush administration, tried very hard to do, and I supported him in that effort. We also need to support a brilliant piece of legislation that's now 51 years old, and that is to permanently authorize and fully fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Yeah. So I won't ask for a show of hands how many of you know that. Obviously, some of you know what that is, but for those that aren't familiar and for the young people in the audience, 51 years ago, a really brilliant Congress said, we are starting to develop the Outer Continental Shelf offshore for oil and gas. And we know that's going to have an impact. And don't we know that now after the terrible Deepwater Horizon spill that my predecessor had to deal with? So let's take just a portion, $900 million a year, and put it aside for conservation efforts onshore. Over time, less than half of that money that was authorized has actually been appropriated. But of the money that has been appropriated, $170 million has come right here to the great state of Maine. So it's made a difference. It's made a difference in Acadia National Park, in Rachel Carson National Wildlife Refuge, where I was earlier today, on the Appalachian Trail, as well as to local parks. So we did get 3 years more authorization out of it, and we did get a touch more money than we'd had in prior years, but it's not good enough. And that's something that I hope that you can help make the case for. The last thing I want to talk about is the importance, and Lucas touched on this a little, of making sure that every American, all ages, all backgrounds, feel welcome on our national parks and our public lands. We have a challenge. I've got a little six-month-old, well, he was 6 months, he's now almost two-year-old grandson. The first one I mentioned that I've given the sharp tools to is a step-grandson. So this is the first biological one, so it's kind of fun for me, except I've missed his babyhood because I've been doing this job. But I was holding him when he was 6 months old, and you know, everybody's taking pictures because everybody's a paparazzi, right? We all have cameras in our pockets these days. And so he was smiling well for the camera to begin with, and then he wanted the camera. And then at 6 months old, he's actually swiping the pictures, right? And I think, this child is brilliant, except that he'd go up to a picture on the wall and try to swipe that too. But my point is that we have these tools in our pockets now that are incredibly valuable and also incredibly addicting to all of us. And for the young among us, the facts aren't very, very good. Kaiser Family Foundation does regular studies, 56 hours a week spent in front of a screen on free time, not doing homework and other things for young people. A lot of time spent on soccer fields and in organized youth sports. Where does that natural curiosity that comes from nature come from in these children if they haven't had an opportunity? So there's a lot that we've been doing, and I hope that there's a lot that you are doing as well to make sure that the people that are in this room a generation, well, first, there is a room like this a generation from now, right? The boards of directors and the county councils and the local councils are filled with people that recognize and care for the environment, because there will never be enough money to go around. So we believe it's a continuum, And we've been working hard on this in the Department of the Interior, and I will continue to rabble-rouse for this long after I'm gone from this job, just as I was rabble-rousing for it before I took this job. That is that it starts with play. Just let them play. Let them play unstructured, outside. Let them hurt themselves, fall out of a tree. It's all good, right? It's all good. So it's easy to say if you live in Millinocket. Maybe easy to say if you live in Portland. It's not so easy if you're in a concrete jungle, and so we're working on that too. Let's move outside. You know, there's no, besides the National Park Service Arrowhead, probably the other best brand in the country is Michelle Obama. And Let's Move Outside is, we took her Let's Move concept and we moved it outside. And 51 cities have signed up. We will continue this program going. It's taking the YMCA, largest daycare provider in the country, partnering them with other youth-serving organizations, AmeriCorps, and cities, the city leadership, as well as the public land managers, to get children into the outdoors and playing. So we have 51 cities that have signed up, and it's well on its way. The president launched the Every Kid in a Park initiative, free pass to America's public lands and waters for every fourth grader in America. I am confident that program is going to continue, so at 12 years from now, many, many youngsters will have been introduced to their public lands in the fourth grade, and that is the perfect age. My older grandson is in the fourth grade now, so look forward to him not using his hatchet in national parks, but getting out into public lands. And it's also why we launched the 21st Century Conservation Service Corps. I've been out with thousands of young people for many years working on public lands, and there's nothing like being told what to do by a youngster who's trained in the Maine Conservation Corps or other Youth Conservation Corps crews around the country, as they're teaching you how to, you know, to build a crib wall, to do a switchback, to build a bridge, to clear rocks out of the pathway, invasive species versus native species. And those young people will get a connection to that place that will never leave them and never leave the people who were out there with them. So I like to call this the CCC 2.0. I wouldn't have called it the 21st Century Conservation Service Corps, 21 CSC, because it's a mouthful, but the fact is, I think we will have, within the Department of Interior, 100,000 young people that have been supported by private philanthropy from corporations over the last 4 years in this program, which is just a taste. I wanted to, you know, like bring back the CCC. That would be millions. In fact, I talked to Ken Salazar about that, my predecessor, in 2009 with a stimulus package saying, let's bring this back. But it's a start, and it's something that is alive and well in Maine and making a big difference. So that's play, learn, serve, and work. When you do these things, you get on your radar the incredible jobs that are available to people in the great outdoors, like the wildlife biologists, several interns that I met today at Rachel Carson National Wildlife Refuge. So I challenge all of you to think about what you can do on your boards of directors, your junior boards of directors, just getting out in a weekend and taking a little person with you, reaching out to your local school, taking kids out that may not otherwise have that opportunity, because I guarantee it will make a huge difference in their lives. And maybe a few of them can get lost in on a mountain in Maine and find his or her way back out safely. So I think it's fair to say that our public lands in this nation are some of the most, if not the most, valuable assets that we own as a nation. It's why China wants to mimic us and start a national park system. It's why I've heard from many other countries about that. And at a time when we face threats from budget cuts to climate change, we can't afford to turn our backs on public lands. And of course, not only are you not doing that here, you're adding to the federal estate through your good work and the generosity of Roxanne and Lucas and their family members. So I'm optimistic when I look around the room that you are going to continue this good work that you're doing. You're going to take action, as you have been, to reduce Maine's carbon footprint. And I know that the battle continues, but you're on it. You're passing legislation to support conservation in forests, farms, and fish. And I appreciate that. You're sharing your love of the outdoors with the next generation, and that's very clear. And Lucas had his kids running around when we were up there. And I'm not worried about them. And you're establishing 87,500-acre national monuments while you're at it. So whether you have $20 million to help Roxanne and Lucas raise money for Katahdin Woods and Waters, or 20 hours to maybe donate, your generosity is going to help the National Park Service accomplish what the American people expect of us, and that is to be in the forever business. That is the business that we're in. So I want to close with a quote from Teddy Roosevelt that he no doubt wrote while drawing inspiration from his time in the Maine North Woods. And he said, "The nation behaves well if it treats its natural resources as assets which it must turn over to the next generation increased and not impaired in value." So as we look to the next 100 years of conservation, or to the first year of Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument next August, I hope that Teddy Roosevelt's words serve as both a call to action and an inspiration to all of us. Thank you so much.
So speaking of children, this is a piece of artwork that was drawn by a 11th grader at Stearns High School, and it was drawn for you, and a number of drawings were made in honor of this event, so here you are.
It's all Moosey and Mossy.
All right, so I have the privilege of closing out the show. I want to thank everyone for coming and all the support that you've given us over the years. And if I started thanking people, I know I'd inevitably leave out so many people. But there is one person that has just been an unbelievable rock for me in this journey, and it's my wife. And I don't know where she is, but I know she's here. Yamaya, when I took this job in 2011, still living in Seattle, which was her hometown, she said, "You know, I bet in a year we're going to move to Maine, aren't we?" And I said, "No, we won't. I can do it from Seattle. It's fine. You know, we'll work it out." And a year later, we're packing up a U-Haul and moving to Maine. And she uprooted our young family from the place that she was raised and committed to this new life on the opposite coast. And when we got here, she said, "Okay, just one thing I ask. I know you're going to be really busy, but don't join any boards. Just for 1 year. Just take one year and think about it." And within 6 months, I was on the board of the Maine Conservation Voters. And she supported me in that effort. And she's been truly the love of my life. Last night at 11:45, I got an email with some incredible edits to my introductions that I made tonight. She has just not stopped supporting me in this effort. And we were walking back two weeks ago from an event in our neighborhood that was celebrating the park, and it was this incredible, optimistic evening with some close supporters. And it dawned on me on that walk home with Yamaya how excited people were for this. And she said, "You know why people are excited? It's because we got to do something. We were advocating for something. And we were not on the defense. And in the environmental community, we find ourselves on the defense so much. And the lesson that I have taken from this is that we can be on the offense. And when we do, amazing things can be done." And so I want just thank Yamaya and for recognizing that, and for all of you being on the offense with us has been a real treat. So thank you all for coming tonight.
You've been listening to Speaking in Maine on Maine Public Radio. Today's keynote speaker was Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, speaking at a celebration held by the Maine Conservation Alliance in honor of the North Woods National Monument. If you missed all or part of today's Speaking in Maine, the program is available on our website, mainepublic.org, where Speaking in Maine is available for streaming and as a podcast. Charles Beck is the executive producer for Speaking in Maine on Maine Public Radio. I'm Jonathan Woodward.